I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We now have the NBA playoff schedule in hand for the first 2 days. Well, actually for the whole first round, but I'm not going to read you all of that. We know the final seeds. We've got all set for this weekend. Plus the start of the puck drops in the Stanley Cup postseason was awesome on Wednesday night. It's a different level of tension, though. I'm telling you what, even when I'm watching at home, which is where I do a good portion of my pre-show prep, I can feel my heart rate on the rise. It's that kind of tension. It's that kind of intensity, even in just these opening games. And already the Tampa Bay Lightning have given people reason to doubt. A one game deficit is not insurmountable, but to lose the way they did, now they have to come out in their next game against the Blue Jackets and make sure nothing is left to chance. Although, I know I don't need to remind you, especially you hockey diehards, that the Blue Jackets had a 2-game lead over the Capitals in last year's first round series, and we know how that turned out. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. If you would like to be like George in Idaho, he just called to ask whether or not the Seattle Mariners had hit a home run on Wednesday. And he did that because he didn't have the capability to Google it on his phone. So he thought, not calling his mom, not calling his best bud, maybe calling a kid, I mean, his kid, not any kid. That sounded funny. Maybe calling a son or a daughter. Nope. Thought it was the best idea to call us. I mean, we're happy to oblige. Full service network here. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We've got a poll up. In the wake of the Lakers exit interviews that did not include LeBron James or Luke Walton, at least making comments, he was doing the actual interviews with the various players, the ones that were there. If you're a young star in the NBA, now keep in mind the word is star here. That means you're already established somewhat. You're not a rookie. This is not you getting drafted. So your first free agent contract in the NBA. Would you like to play with LeBron James in LA? That's where he is. He's there for the next 2 years at least. Would you take the allure of Los Angeles, the iconic franchise that is the Lakers, even though it's in disarray? Would you like to play with LeBron? Or would those two things make it difficult? Maybe playing for the Lakers right now is not appealing because it looks like they're a disaster. Or maybe it's playing with LeBron that doesn't appeal. We know it doesn't to everyone. But I think most young guys, this is my opinion, most young guys would tell you, hey, to have a couple of years to play with one of the greatest of all time, to see how he operates, to maybe pick up some of his pre and post routine, but also his approach. It's not forever. He's 34. He's got 2 years left on his Lakers deal. Even if he would sign another deal, I don't want to say he's in the twilight of his career, but if you're a young star, you could probably spare a couple of years. And you never know. They could end up bringing in another big name star. I mean, I feel like Anthony Davis falls into this category, and he was desperate to go to LA. He just turned 26, and he wanted to be there when he was 25. Kawhi Leonard may still be pursued by the Lakers and or the Clippers. Probably both. If you want to win, If you want to say you wore Lakers gold and purple, if you want to play in front of the type of crowds that you play for in Staples Center, and whether LeBron is a draw, that is maybe debatable. I think he is for a lot of young guys, but I don't know that he's a deterrent for younger guys. Again, because your career is likely to outlast his, and you have a couple of years to learn from one of the greatest, to play alongside one of the greatest. I know the improvement wasn't there this year for the Lakers beyond the two wins. LeBron was injured for a little while, but they had much bigger issues in their starting lineup with injuries. Brandon Ingram, one of the guys who did speak at the exit interviews on Wednesday, and he talked about how challenging these few months have been, not just for the team as a whole, but also for him personally.
Last couple months, just basketball, back and forth to the hospital, back and forth to the doctor, trying to figure out what's going on. I've been in good spirits, just watching the guys have fun, play basketball, having the chance to have something to do while I'm at home. Overall, I've just been trying to figure out the fastest way to get healthy.
So Brandon Ingram, LeBron James, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Tyson Chandler, all of these guys ended up getting shut down by the Lakers late. Josh Hart was part of that too, right? They were in and out of the lineup, not to mention all the mess with the trade debacle that didn't happen around Anthony Davis and the deadline. And so there was a lot of drama. There's a lot more attention when it's the Lakers anyway, but then having LeBron James there and the possibility that loomed large of him and the franchise missing the playoffs for a sixth consecutive spring, all of those things kind of dovetailed and drew extra spotlight. But I don't know that that's a deterrent. That roster's likely to turn over in a big way. This was supposed to be a bridge year anyway, with a bunch of contracts that would be gone after this season, so that Magic and Jeannie and Rob Pelinka could then figure out how to attract big name guys. And so a lot of you are weighing in again on both Twitter and Facebook. You can take the poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then on our Facebook page, well, you'll see LeBron. Okay. You guys blow up the Facebook page these days. I think the idea of playing with LeBron is maybe not as appealing to older guys like Kevin Durant talked about this year. And Kyrie Irving, who loved it at the beginning, and now maybe has a different perspective now that he recognizes how difficult it is to be the number one guy in a franchise. He maybe has a newfound respect for LeBron James. But yeah, if you're an older guy like a Kevin Durant and you're a superstar at the same level, well then no, you don't want to be in LeBron's orbit. But there are a lot of guys who would take that experience if they're much earlier in their career. Not to mention, again, the lure of winning, even though it didn't happen this year with the Lakers. I still say they're on the rise, depending on who they can get in the offseason. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So the NBA playoffs will begin coming up on Saturday. Here are the seeds. The schedule is out for both Saturday, Sunday. But the seeds play out like this in the East. Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, the top four, all hosting the opening games. Boston will not have Marcus Smart. We just found that out on Wednesday. He's got a torn oblique that he suffered last weekend, and he's out for at least 4 weeks, at least, before he can resume basketball activities. Now, if you keep in mind that the NBA playoffs often stretch into mid-June, in fact, I don't even think the finals can start before like May 31st, June 1st. There's a cutoff in there somewhere. They can't begin before that. Remember, sometimes we end up having a good week between the conference finals and the start of the NBA finals. So depending on how far the Celtics go, they could get him back, but they could not. If they would get past the Pacers, who's their first-round opponent, and the Bucks take care of business against Detroit, well, then Milwaukee would be Boston's next opponent. And that's tough to do without the guy that brings the toughness and the grittiness. Of course, the defense, he's having a good career year in terms of field goal percentage and three-point percentage. He's been in that starting lineup going back to the first month of the season. So big, big hole for the Celtics. Indiana the 5, Brooklyn the 6, Orlando the 7, and the Pistons with Dwayne Casey as the first-year head coach. And I've said this already on the show. It's the only thing I would do differently. I don't much care about the matchups. I'm good however they play out. But it would have been juicy to get Toronto and Detroit tipping off against one another and have Dwayne Casey go back to Toronto as the head coach of the Pistons in an opening round playoff series. In the West, Golden State takes the 1, which we already knew. The Denver Nuggets secure the 2 seed in coming back on Wednesday night for a win. Portland has the 3 seed. Houston slips to the 4. And then Utah is 5. Oklahoma City is 6. The Spurs are 7. And the Clippers will take on the defending champs in the opening round. They drop to the 8 seed. Although it's better to be the 8 seed in LA than to be the no seed in the Lakers. So we'll talk a little more about the playoff series and the one that you're most looking forward to coming up in our next show. We're hours away from the start of the Masters. Very exciting. The first major of the year in golf. And of course, a tradition unlike any other. I wish we could get paid for every time we heard that over the next few days. The par 3 competition is in the past and now it's for reals. And so in 25 minutes, we will preview. Oh, it's coming up next. Coming up next, which is not actually 10 minutes. It'll be 5 minutes. We will preview the Masters with our friend Matt Adams. And then we'll get to your Stanley Cup postseason. Crazy Tampa Bay Lightning collapse. Overtime at the Nassau Coliseum. Joe Pavelski, the captain of the Sharks, scores a goal with his face. No, I'm not kidding. So a lot that happened on the ice last night as well. Thanks so much for tuning in. Good Thursday morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
For me to have gotten in the winner's circle after the years I've had past few years was, I didn't really understand. I didn't really know if I'd ever get there again. And lo and behold, I got there again. So to me, I'm still working on it, still trying to get better. I'm still trying to win more events. But I think that winning at East Lake confirmed to me that I can still win again.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Okay, I'll just be honest. I'm a little bit worried about half our audience hitting snooze and going back to sleep with that beautiful Masters music that's associated with golf's first major on CBS and the voice of Tiger Woods. This is really the road that he's taken to try to get ready for the Masters, and it included a win last year again, but he hasn't had a major win since 2008. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, and we're so pleased to welcome our friend Matt Adams from the Golf Channel and the nationally syndicated Fairways of Life. And Matt, when you think about the Tiger Woods question, there's always so much more to it than just, oh, how does this game look right now? However, how set up is he for Augusta National this week?
Better than in the last few years. What's going on, Amy? Do you know, to talk about that theme music for the Masters for a second, mm-hmm. There's actually words to that song.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know it.
I can't recount them. I don't know what they are, but I have it somewhere. I have an old, what do they call it, 45, the old records, the little records, and yes. Someone gave it to me, and I have it in a bookshelf, and so there are words in that actual song.
Amazing.
Someday I'll listen to that if I can ever find the old record player. Tiger Woods is, yeah, he's a different Tiger Woods than he was when he was at the height of his run, and however you define that, because there's different eras, different chapters, different Tiger Woods, interestingly enough, changed his swing multiple times along the way. The difference with this Tiger Woods right now is that he is playing And don't get me wrong in this, because I don't mean this to be disparaging. He's playing like an old Tiger Woods, not like Tiger of old. And what I mean by that is that Tiger is not playing the power game anymore. He knows that he can't outdrive the whole rest of the field. He knows he can't take it over the corner here and do things that Tiger used to do in his youth that blew away fields. There are players out there consistently longer than he is. What Tiger is he's very crafty. He's actually backed down on his efforts to generate ball speed and club head speed. He's actually finding, as a result, more fairways. His iron play is exceptional and always has been, and he defied, literally, the critics with a wedge in hand around the greens when they declared him, you know, dead and gone, that he had chipping yips and he wouldn't be able to recover from them. Well, mm-hmm. He more than recovered from them. The only concern, however, with Tiger is that he hasn't been on the same level as he was where he ended last season. He just referenced in that sound you played winning the Tour Championship. Well, you know what? That was at the end of the summer, and he has yet to reach the heights of where he was then. The hopeful sign for the legions that are fans of Tiger Woods is the fact that I think everything that he's done from that point that he won up until today has been about getting ready for this event. I think he's tried to conserve his energy. I think he ran out of gas at the end of last year, and I think we saw it at the Ryder Cup. I think everything that he's doing, every step he makes, every time he wakes up in the morning, it's about getting ready for the 4 days that lie before us, and it all kicks off today.
You know what? I was stunned. I will admit this. I had no idea that Jordan Spieth had dropped to 33rd in the world. That seems crazy, but mm-hmm. I know he struggled a lot, and not just making the cuts, but Saturdays have been the bane of his existence, it seems like, in 2019. So what's wrong with Jordan's game?
Well, Jordan is Jordan. He's always been kind of like a cat on a hot tin roof. He's always kind of jittery in the way he carries himself. I believe that the difference between Jordan that was dominant and contending almost every time that he teed it up and the Jordan that exists right now is that the Jordan that exists right now is searching for the elusive. He's playing swing instead of playing golf. Having said that, however, Jordan has the ability to slip into Jordan Spieth superhero costume when he comes out and does things that seem to defy anything that he does in the chapters that surround the novel that he's writing during a particular major championship. So, and especially this major championship, where if you look at his record over the last few years, I don't think he's finished outside of fourth, and he's led multiple times.
Right.
So I have a feeling that Jordan, when he steps to the tee at Augusta National, all that other stuff goes away. And I think that Jordan is going, just like you saw last year at the Open at Carnoustie, where for three or four rounds he was contending, he was leading, he was marching potentially towards another major championship. Finally, the sand ran out of the hourglass in the final round. So I have a feeling with Augusta National that, just similar to Tiger, even more dramatically in the case of form that Jordan's coming in with, however, is that he's going to find himself amongst the greens and the hills of Augusta National, and he's going to do things that we're used to Jordan Spieth doing. Whether that will continue the next time he tees it up is the big question, and I'm inclined to doubt.
Matt Adams of the Golf Channel and also the nationally syndicated Fairways of Life is with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio, previewing the Masters, which begins in just a few hours, as a matter of fact. One of the things I've loved about the Masters in recent years is having first-time winners and recognizing how it completely alters a career arc. It's a little bit like winning Daytona in NASCAR. Even if you never win again, it changes your career. It changes you. So we've got a bunch of very accomplished golfers who've never won at the Masters. What's one golfer that you think could be a first-time winner this week?
Well, the prominent one, the one that's also the favorite in everyone's minds, is Rory McIlroy. He's searching for this win at Augusta National, which would also complete for him a career Grand Slam. He's got great form coming in. He already won. He won the Players. I think the concern with Rory McIlroy, if there is one, is that his driving accuracy is still not good. I mean, in the third round of the Players, they had the rough so manageable up there that players could get an iron behind the ball almost regardless of where it was. You know, he was barely in the 30 percentile in terms of driving accuracy on that day and still went on to win. There's a lot of places you can't do that. Now, the rough isn't massive at Augusta National either, mind you. However, there's not too much that you can do about the pine trees. There is technical differences there between that and the TPC Stadium course. So if he mires himself in those woods, he's going to have to play punch-out shots, and he's going to lose half a stroke to a stroke on a hole as a result. That's where my concern lies for Rory McIlroy. But in terms of, other than that, how he's playing, he has so much better control of high-lofted clubs this year statistically than what he's done in the past. He's three times better than where he had been. He was mired somewhere around 150 and higher in ranking on tour in terms of anywhere from 150 yards into the green. He still has an anomaly that the closer he gets to the green, the more trouble that he has with those clubs in his hands.
Right.
Ranked like 180th from 75 yards. But you need that at Augusta National, especially if you have his length. And we've seen some quirky decisions made in the past with a wedge in hand for Rory, but Rory still is the most favorite of the players, but there's a lot of players with form.
I have to ask, because your tweet caught my attention. On your show, Fairways of Life, you had 1956 Masters champion Jack Burke, and you said that this is one of your top five interviews of all time. So what did he say that was so impressive?
Well, first of all, when you're talking to someone that accomplished something more than 60 years ago, when virtually everybody else that was in that field is dead and gone, and he wins in 1956, which was at the height of the reign of some iconic, you're talking about pantheon sitting golfers of all time like Ben Hogan and Sam Snead. Mm-hmm. I had to find out what it was like. You remember, he beat Ken Venturi. To this day, he has the record for the largest comeback at the Masters. He started that final round 8 shots back of then amateur Ken Venturi, overtook him and won the tournament. Now, part of that was because, as they say, Amy, you needed help at the top of the leaderboard, and you got it because Venturi shot a final round 80, consumed by the moment. But one of the things that we spoke to Jack about the other day, you can find it, in fact, it's on fairwaysoflife.com.
One of the things
we spoke to him about was, what was it like to play with hickory-shafted clubs? Think about that for a second. This is a guy that grew up with, learned to play golf with hickory-shafted clubs because that's all there was. And we just talked to the guy. The guy's still with us at 96 years young.
Oh.
So it was just those kind of experiences that you cannot get anyplace else.
Right.
He's a human bridge to an era, to the past, and that was the thing. And then one of the things I did was I said, Mr. Burke, I'd like to throw a name at you, and you tell me the first thing that comes to mind. And I went down the road. Walter Hagen, Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones, Bill Palmer, Ben Hogan, Sam Snead. Think about that for a second. I'm getting a chill even recounting the story with you. It was really cool.
Well, good. Since my grandmother just turned 97, this interview absolutely appeals to me. So I'll go back and check it out. Really quick, before I let you go, maybe 45 seconds. For people who've never been to Augusta National, don't know what it's about, why is it so iconic? Why is it so unique?
Well, it's one venue that's had the same event since 1934. That's first and foremost. As a result, it becomes part of all of our lives. I know you play golf, Amy, and you know that the Masters Forever has been the start of your golf season, just like everybody else that lives in the snow belt, even though I know a lot of people get nasty weather today around the northern tier of the country. But that's the primary thing. It's a part of us, we're a part of it, and it's a course that we know, and we remember the history that took place there.
Awesome. Always enjoy having Matt on the show. You can find him at Matt Adams, FOL, and his show is Fairways of Life, nationally syndicated. So there are links on his Twitter. You'll also see him on the Golf Channel over the weekend covering the Masters. Matt, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amy. Bye.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Jenner takes it and he plays it up to Anderson. Here comes a short-handed chance, maybe. Anderson in. He takes a shot and he scores! Who can score a short-handed goal? The Andy Man can! And this game is tied at 3. Werenski to Panarin. Back to Jones. He shoots and he scores! I'm jonesing for a power play goal, and Seth Jones just buried it. And the Blue Jackets lead 4-3.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Bob McElligott on the Columbus Blue Jackets Radio Network. They were down 3-0 after the first period. And in fact, it's perfect. It's perfect bookend. When you consider the first goal that Columbus gave up to Tampa Bay was a shorthanded goal. Alex Killorn with this amazing steal, some pretty stick work, and off he goes like a penalty shot. There was nobody else on his half of the ice. Nobody could catch up with him, and he scores. First went forehand, then backhand on Sergei Bobrovsky. So that was the original goal that put the Blue Jackets in a hole. And then they come back and they take the lead. 4 consecutive goals of their own. But it's Seth Jones on a power play doing it the right way. And the Blue Jackets stun the President's Trophy winner. This is not the way the Lightning wanted to start out their Stanley Cup postseason. But in fact, they trail the Blue Jackets 1-0. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Stanley Cup postseason began with 5 series on Wednesday night. And boy, I could already feel my heart rate rising. It's that time of the year. So John Cooper is the head coach of the Lightning. Was asked what changed after building that 3-goal lead.
Our mentality was, we wanted to outscore them tonight. And instead of build the lead and then shut them down. And when you have the mentality of you want to outscore teams, these are things that can happen.
So they changed who they were as opposed to taking care of business. You have to be a little more conservative. You have to protect that lead. They were getting a little bit too cutesy out of what they normally do or out of the way that you win a playoff game. Sometimes you don't need to be putting up 6 goals. Sometimes you don't need to be showing off and flexing your muscles. What you really need to do is protect the lead that you built. It looked like they were off and running, and I mean going to lap the Blue Jackets. Not so fast. Lots of pressure on the Lightning, of course, after their 126 points in the regular season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I don't even know how to introduce this particular comment from John Tortorella, except to say that it's John Tortorella.
I'll tell you right now, this room smells of BO. I'll tell you. My gosh. Before, no, it's not me. It's not me. I walked into it here, and so does that end this thing here?
I mean, I don't know the context there, but I can't imagine why that was necessary in any way, shape, or form. Your team just came back. Maybe it was an icebreaker. Your team just came back after falling into a 3-0 hole against the best team in the NHL, and that's how you start. Like I said, it's John Tortorella. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. There wasn't that much separation between the Islanders and the Penguins, but this had its own ebb and flow in that the Islanders 4 times put a go-ahead goal on the board. 3 times the Penguins came back. In fact, they tied this game with 90 seconds left in regulation. And then Josh Bailey has a few seconds left before they would head to overtime. And he clangs a shot off the post. The puck hits the post so loud you can hear it on TV. I love it when that happens. I mean, I love it when the post plays defense. But just the idea of it being a half an inch one way or the other. And you're talking about a totally different outcome. So instead, he clangs it off the post and they go into overtime, which sets us up for a little bit of mini redemption. It might be too early to be talking about redemption in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but it's cool that he had another chance in sudden death.
Flipped it ahead for Matt Barzal. 2-on-1 with Eberle into the Penguins' own left circle. Barzal all alone in front. Deeks shoots and scores! The Islanders win it in overtime! Josh Bailey knocked it in! And New York wins it! 4-3 to take game 1. They are mobbing Bailey in the Penguin zone as the Islanders have their first playoff win at the Coliseum in nearly 4 years.
I liked a lot of things. I really liked our first period. I thought we came out with the right energy. We were managing pucks. We were playing the Islander hockey. I thought we got away from it in the second a little bit. It was good to give our power play some confidence. They got a goal for us.
Barry Trotz, who, of course, sparked and, well, guided would be the better word for a coach, the Washington Capitals to their first Stanley Cup last year. Now with the Islanders, they're back in the playoffs. And this was kind of a neat nerd alert that I heard when they were starting the broadcast. And maybe some of you heard it too. But the Islanders, because of the fact that they've changed venues, but also because they hadn't hosted a first round playoff series, it was the first time the Nassau Coliseum had been the site of a puck drop in the postseason. The start of the series since 1988. And that place, affectionately nicknamed The Barn, that place was insane. So it was really cool. It was the goalie who said that he doesn't know how the fans could be that up and that loud for so long. Robin Lehner, he had 41 saves. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. In the Western Conference, you had the captain of the San Jose Sharks score a goal off his face. I saw some of the jokes on Twitter, like gives new meaning to the term face off, taking one for the team. But he actually did get credit for a goal off his face. So Brent Burns, this is late in the first period, Brent Burns has a wrist shot. Thank heavens it wasn't a slap shot. He has a wrist shot from the top, and it gets deflected by a stick, somebody else who was in front of the crease, and it bounces off of Joe Pavelski's face. And so I hadn't yet seen any type of, I mean, Pavelski was gone for a while. He didn't actually hit the ice or anything. He didn't go down. He ended up going into the locker room and was gone for quite a while until they could fit him with this plastic mask. The only it had extra space that it created around his jaw, so he couldn't get hit again. Had to be painful. He looked like he had a real puffy lip, some blood on the inside, potentially a tooth or two missing. What we heard was a couple of teeth, not as specific, but he did have to have stitches. And yet he came back out and played again. I don't know how painful it was to smile, but he was out there and he had gotten credit for that first period goal and then was able to inspire his teammates when he came out and kept going. And I do appreciate the fact that he had some humor about it afterwards. And it's easier to have humor when the Sharks win. Burns ends up with another goal in a 3-on-3. Mark Edward Vlasic, Evander Kane, they also had goals over the Golden Knights, and it was an incredible atmosphere there in SAP. Big difference, of course, being that last year when these two teams met in the second round, it was the Vegas Golden Knights who had the home ice advantage. But gosh, he literally scored a goal off his face. That's how it appears in the box score.
It's nice to hear the fans cheer. Silver lining sort of thing. Should I go to the pile or not? I knew everything was messed up there for a little bit, and, but I think somewhat fortunate.
I'm keeping the dentist in business, so that's, he goes to the hard areas, that's why he scores so many goals, and it's, the front of the net's not a fun place to be, but he's one of the best in the world at it, and the other one was a great play by Carl and Hertz.
Brent Burns, keeping the dentist in business. I guess you can make the most of a painful and bloody situation. What do some of you tell me all the time? That hockey players are the toughest in sports. I mean, I'll bet there are bloody lips in other sports as well. I'm quite confident of that. But the teeth thing, it just seems like it happens all the time. Poor Joe Pavelski, the captain of the Sharks, off his face. I don't know. I feel like Brent Burns should get credit for that, but that's how hockey is. Burns gets the assist. Pavelski's face gets credit for the goal. You had three of the road teams winning in these first games on Wednesday night. And, of course, we have three more series that will begin on Thursday night. But St. Louis with a massive save by Jordan Binnington just at the end of the game against the Jets. So he had 24 saves and was able to preserve that win. Dallas comes back against the Predators in Nashville for a 3-2 lead to start the series, or 3-2 win to start that series. And then, of course, Columbus being the third road team to win. That one was, I mean, that was the shock value, the shock factor. So Stanley Cup playoffs often skating. That's corny. The NBA playoffs will start Saturday, Sunday, Masters today. So we'll be back tonight after the opening round. Enjoy your crazy sports day and whatever else you're doing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.